Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. This show is sponsored by Dixon's Chemist, who are the experts in LDN and associated treatments in the UK. Dixon's Chemist are the most cost-effective for LDN in all forms within the UK and Europe, maintaining safety standards far in excess of what is required. Why would you choose to get your LDN from anywhere else? Call 0141 404 6545 today to speak to their LDN experts. Today my guest is Dr. Edith, who's from Poland, and she's a rheumatologist. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Edith.
Hello, good afternoon. It's a pleasure for me.
And could you tell us your full name, please?
My full name is, in Polish, Edyta Biernat-Kaluza. I'm a rheumatologist, PhD rheumatologist.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and when did you first hear about LDN?
So it was thanks to one of my patients who was a doctor. It was about, I think, 3-4 years ago, and she suffered from rheumatoid arthritis, and she was the first person who told me about LDN.
Mm-hmm. And I understand you take it yourself.
Yes, I'm a patient, a rheumatological patient, and not only neurological too, because I suffer from arthritis with HLA-B27 antigen, and my arthritis is like psoriatic, sometimes reactive. But my second problem, immunological problem, is multiple sclerosis. So now my arthritis is okay, but it's a little bit worse with MS, and due to MS, I started a few months ago to treat myself with LDN.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when you first started, you know, what was your experience?
So at first, my first experience was as a doctor, and when I started to treat my patients, especially young women who wanted to be pregnant, but they suffered from rheumatoid arthritis and they used methotrexate. It was impossible to be pregnant using these drugs, so then I started to find a new solution, and then I started to prescribe them LDN. And it was a fantastic reaction for them, and because of that pain were much less, they started to feel better and better. And after such new patients, such experience, I started to prescribe to much more patients of mine. So I have various patients with Hashimoto, with psoriasis, with SLE, and so on and so on. And I have a lot of MS patients because I do preventive medicine and nutritional medicine, and various patients would be treated not only with pharmacology but with these natural treatments too. But I prescribe now a lot of LDN.
Mm-hmm. And what dose do you start your patients on?
I think it was about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was my first experience.
Yes. The dose that you prescribe for your patients when they start?
I start with 1.5 and later generally 3, at first 10 days with 1.5, later 3 milligrams, and maximum dose is 4.5. Very rarely I had to reduce this first dose, for example, 0.5 milligram.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Have any of your patients ever experienced any adverse side effects?
Some. I think about 5% they have some adverse events. It is generally irritation or some problems with during night and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If they can't sleep, enough, good enough.
Mm-hmm. And what has been your own personal experience?
I feel generally very well. What I'm able to say that my reaction to stress, such a life stress, is much better. But my adverse events were very extensive night dreams and so on. So I had to change the time of dosing. Instead, before going to sleep, I take LDN in the morning, and it's okay for me, and I do everything normally.
Mm-hmm. Some people find that taking LDN in the morning gives them more energy. Have you noticed that?
Generally, I'm the person with a lot of energy, so I think I'm not able to say that. Maybe more, I have more energy, but never mind, I had a lot of energy before taking LDN too.
That's good. So, being a rheumatologist, what other conditions have you treated LDN for? I mean, you named quite a few there. Do you have any exceptional cases that you could tell us about?
So my patients, rheumatological patients, whom I treat, so they are patients with, for example, ankylosing spondylitis, psoriatic arthritis, very often, and the most group is rheumatoid arthritis and so on, and a lot of patients with so-called collagenosis, for example, Sjögren syndrome, SLE and so on. So it's my main group because they are my rheumatological patients. But I have a lot of endocrinological patients, especially with Hashimoto disease. So I observe very interesting results that serologic is much better during LDN therapy. And another group is MS patients, because a lot of people want to be treated by me because that I'm MS patient.
Mm-hmm.
And they see that I walk very well and I do everything normally and so on. And generally this patient would like to follow my good condition.
Mm-hmm. And with your Hashimoto's patients or patients with taking thyroid medications, do you find they have to reduce the amount of thyroid medications that they take?
A little bit, yes, but the most important for me is observing this reducing of antibodies, anti-thyroid antibodies. So it's very important for me and for patients, but some of them are able to reduce thyroid hormones too.
Mm-hmm. And what about patients that come to you who are already taking opiate painkillers? Because we know that people with arthritis and sciatic arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, etc., etc., are people that suffer with high levels of pain?
I generally inform them that it's better not to combine, and they generally don't use opioid therapy together with LDN.
Mm-hmm.
So my experience is not to be with patients who use both treatment, opioid and LDN, so I don't have such an experience.
Mm-hmm. But if a patient was already on the opioids and wanted to try LDN, what do you do to get them off the opioids?
You see, I generally try to use different solutions, for example, paracetamol or anti-inflammatory typical non-steroidal treatment. So then I'm able to check different solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And with opioid, I do generally opioid treatment or LDN, and not together, not till now. I don't have such an experience now, till mm-hmm. now.
And you talked about the nutritional side. What do you recommend for your patients to follow?
It depends on which treatment, but on which disease. But generally, for autoimmunological diseases, the good solution is diet without gluten, without dairy. Generally, Vegan, non-gluten diet is the best solution, but we check what's reaction for legumes, and I do very often antibodies. We call it intolerance, and antibodies anti-IgG class 4, and based on this, I try to find good diet for my patients. But generally, the diet is gluten-free, dairy-free, without meat. Some people decide to eat only white meat, but of course without red.
Mm-hmm.
Red meat.
Yes, that's really interesting. Supplements. Do you recommend any supplements for your patients? I know that everybody is individual and every condition is different, so what people need to take varies. But you know, if you had to say the top four favourite supplements that you like to recommend to your patients, what would they be?
So the first step for me is vitamin D3. And I have big experience with treatment with high doses. So I participate, for example, in international conferences on vitamin D3. And the dose depends on the condition, but minimal level in Poland is 30 nanograms per milliliter. But for autoimmunological problems, the best is 75 milligram per milliliter. But generally, if patient has only metabolic problems, so 50 is okay. I had an occasion to talk with Professor Michael Holick from Boston, who is guru in the field of vitamin D3, and he treats in cooperation with a doctor from Brazil patients with MS with doses, overdoses, 250, and they have good results. Me personally, I try to treat patients with maximal dose, and not dose, but the maximal level 150, so 150 milligrams per milliliter is for MS patients. But generally for autoimmunological is 75. So the first is vitamin D3. Different supplement is, for example, prebiotics, and it's different. I base of my experience on preventive and personalized medicine conferences organized by Cleveland Clinic. I'm the only participant from Europe who go to States, and Professor Michael Roizen suggests during last conference that prebiotics ought to be changed every 3 to 6 months. So I do this. I prescribe omega-3, and I like curcumin, and so on. Sometimes I use enzymes like bromelain and so on, papain, and I use a lot of these natural enzymes too.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it's really important what you put in your body, and microbiome in the gut seems to be quite a hot topic over here in the UK right now. They were saying
the whole world, I think,
that if you got your microbiome correct, that it eliminates a lot of gut issues and other conditions. Could you tell us a bit about that, your experience of microbiome?
So in Poland, a very popular form of diet is diet of Dr. Ewa Dąbrowska. It's based only on vegetables and some fruits, and it lasts about maximum 6 weeks. And thanks to eating only these vegetables, microbiome is changing, and permeability of mucosa in ileum is much better. And thanks to these changes in diet, for example, in direction of vegan diet, is much better. And my experience is that if my patients decide not to eat meat, they feel much better in in various conditions. Sometimes if patient has some gastric problem or maybe gastrointestinal problem, not too often I do examination of microbiome, but it's very difficult. And I do in different place in Poland, not in Warsaw.
Mm-hmm. And a documentary that I was listening to, they were saying that when somebody takes antibiotics, of course, the antibiotics kill all the bacteria, good and bad. And they said that it was rather like a forest fire for the microbiome. It just wipes everything out, and to only take antibiotics when it was essential. But also things like cans of drink that have aspartame in them, that kills microbiome as well. Is that correct?
I'm not able to understand this last part. Could you repeat, please?
Okay.
Because on antibiotics, I understand everything, but yes, this last part, I didn't catch.
Cans of fizzy drinks. I didn't really want to mention any brands, but, you know, the cans of drinks that you buy that are sugar-free have aspartame in them. And it was saying that the aspartame, which is the sugar substitute, also kills microbiome.
Probably, yes. And, for example, I suggest to drink not sugar drinks and so on. And if my patients ask if it ought to be sparkling, I said, no sparkling drinks, please. So I generally suggest to drink water with, for example, lemon and so on, or maybe apple acid. It works well for agonize, not to have such a low acidity in your agonize. But of course, sparkling and especially sugar drinks are very bad.
Yes. And of course, to keep your kidneys healthy and your bladder, you really need to drink plenty of water to keep flushing everything out that's lurking in your body. If you're not hydrated, it's a problem, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's necessary to keep in mind that it's we ought to drink before going to sleep too, because during night, for example, some cast might create some crystals and so on. So it's necessary to drink before going to sleep, not only during the day, but hydration is very, very important. But it might be persons with heart problem, especially insufficiency of the heart, oughtn't to drink too much, because it might be too heavy for their heart.
How much would you recommend that somebody drink before going to bed?
So, for example, it's one glass, and the best thing is not to wake up during night to go to the toilet. Mm. So I suggest them to try it for themselves, which volume is the best for them.
Okay.
So it will be one glass or half of the glass. So each person is different.
And what is your take on, like, tea and coffee and caffeine? Is that okay to have in moderation, or should people? Because, I mean, there are people that drink tea and coffee all day long, and some people have strong black coffee. I mean, how does that affect the system?
So my experience as a doctor is very various, because some patients, if they drink coffee before night or even green tea before night, some of them are not able to sleep. But some patients like to drink coffee and go to sleep, and I know or knew such persons. Generally, if the patient asks me if I can drink a lot of coffee or how many coffees, I answer that it depends on your genes. And we do special genes. We send saliva to Canada, and we check which type of gene you have and how many, for example, caffeine you are able to drink. But caffeine, it means both coffee, both green tea, and so on, chocolate, and so on and so on. So we know that some persons are able to admit 200 milligrams of caffeine. It's okay. For example, me, I have such a subtype of gene, and different persons are able to drink much more coffee. depends on your genes.
Mm-hmm. And what about alcohol? Where does that sit with the amounts that people can tolerate without there being an issue? And of course, alcohol is also high in sugar, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But you see, it generally depends from how do you think about alcohol and so on. Because, for example, from oncological point of view, generally all alcohol is bad, and it may create more cancers. For example, women with breast cancer, if they drink even acceptable amount of one glass of red wine, their probability to have recurrence of breast cancer is high. So generally, much better is not to drink, but it's very difficult to live this way. So, from example, me as a doctor, a rheumatological doctor, we know that, for example, the most important arthritis in the whole world is gout. And for gout, drinking alcohol is very bad, but the worst is beer, because it's a source of purine too. So if my patient with gout asks me, doctor, what I'm able to drink, then I answer, it might be a little bit of vodka with lemon juice.
Okay.
And generally people, even today I had patients and he said to me that if he drinks vodka, then he feels well with this lemon juice.
I can remember having gout years ago. I must have been late 20s, early 30s. And I thought it was just old people that got gout. I've had it
and
twice.
It's very popular.
But it's in my big toe. But it was very painful, really, really painful. Does that come under rheumatology, gout?
Yes.
Okay.
And now it's the most popular arthritis in the whole world, but it isn't only toe, it might be ankle, it might be knee, it might be, for example, elbow and so on. So it might be problem with arthritis, or sometimes it's problem with tendonitis. So, for example, Achilles tendonitis and so on. And it very often is due to too high levels of uric acid.
And how do you...
But the second point is sugar. That it's a patient with high uric acid, if they eat a lot of sweets and so on, then probability of attack of gout is higher. In the contrary, if they don't eat sugar.
And once you've had gout, are you then more prone to have reoccurring attacks of gout?
Yes, but generally now we know that gout isn't so difficult to treat, because it's very important to reduce level of uric acid before 4 milligrams per liter, and then recurrent gout doesn't exist, or these attacks are rarer, more rare, and so on and so on. So now it's only question how good the gout is treated. So it isn't a problem now. In reality, I'm in such a group, GCAN, so it's gout and Christophe's network group from about 170 scientists from the whole world connected in science about gout, and we know that if gout is good treated, so it isn't a problem.
Well, that's good. So if anybody is listening who suffers with gout, there is good news that it can be treated.
Generally the very popular treatment in the UK too is allopurinol, but we have new, more modern drugs, and if somebody is very systematic, so it works very well. And I know Dr. Doherty from UK, and he led such a nurse-led take care of patients with gout with very good results, so even better than doctors-led care. This nurse care is better.
Wonderful.
Thanks to time. thanks to explaining everything and so on, but doctors hurry too much generally.
Mm-hmm. And anybody listening, if they would like to come and see you to have an appointment to discuss their condition, how would they get hold of you?
So it isn't so easy. As you see, I'm able to speak English and I do telemedicine. So it's able to find my place of work in Orlik in Warsaw and write, for example, email, and then I'm able to find appointment for such patient.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a waiting list?
Generally, in Poland, I don't in reality admit first patients who would like to be treated by me, and most of them is admitted by my assistant doctor. But in case of patients from abroad, then I will find time personally for them.
Uh-huh. Well, we do have quite
a few...
I
have a very long waiting list.
We do have quite a few members from Poland, so I'm sure they'd be very happy to seek you out, even if they have to wait for an appointment. But it's been amazing talking to you today. Thank you very much for being such an amazing guest.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure and honour for you. For me, thank you very much for invitation and for everything.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This show is sponsored by Dixon's Chemist, who are the experts in LDN and associated treatments in the UK. Dixon's Chemist are the most cost-effective for LDN in all forms within the UK and Europe, maintaining safety standards far in excess of what is required. Why would you choose to get your LDN from anywhere else? Call 0141 404 6545 today to speak to their LDN experts. Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.